I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of time. To become a part of time.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. Well, if you're new to ET Yoga, I should let you know that the program is basically about self-empowering practices and ideas that come from the ancient yogic matters connected to practical experience that I've had over the course of a few decades on a spiritual journey, and also related to the positive comments and channelings from extraterrestrial sources. And in relation to that, the show will be jam-packed with information, so you might want to keep a pencil and paper handy to write down things that you might want to follow up on later or follow up on certain websites that might be given. And in our usual manner, we begin every program with the Hari Om mantra meditation as done by Sri Swami Satchidananda. So if the guys in the booth would play that now, that'd be much appreciated.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Hari.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Om. Shanti,
Yes, that was the clip from back in the 1970s from Sri Swami Satchidananda, and he's the founder of the Integral Yoga Institutes. I'd like at this time to give my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and although thought to be accurate is provided as is and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. And for those new to ET yoga, I usually tell the listening audience that I applaud your efforts to distance yourself from mainstream medical as much as humanly possible in the pursuit of self-empowerment and sovereignty. I should also mention that I'm always interested in receiving or hearing about interesting yoga stories. And if you've got one, you've heard a good one, maybe from a yoga master or a concept that you think you haven't heard on ET Yoga, and you could share that. And you could easily do that by contacting me by email at paperfungo, that's P-A-P-E-R-F-U-N-G-O, paperfungo at yahoo.ca. And I might add that I'm also very receptive to our audience making input into content of the programming. And if you've got a topic that you'd like me to do a show about, you can be pretty sure I'll do it if you contact me. And you can also contact me by going to my website at www.etyoga.com. And at the etyoga.com site, you'll also find my newest book, which is Yoga 2012 and Beyond, The True Nature of Reality. And it's a popular item. I've got really good feedback on it. If you like the ET Yoga show, jam-packed with information, I think you'll like the book. And another popular item there that many people are quite interested in is called Miraculous Cures. And I think considering the state of health world today, I can see why a lot of people might want some hints in certain directions there. So Miraculous Cures and ET Yoga 2012 and Beyond, The True Nature of Reality, can be found on my website, and I much appreciate your support, as well as I much appreciate the ET Yoga audience for just being you, because as we know, you're making the maximum difference you can make just by being you. And speaking of yoga stories, I'm going to share with you tonight one from actually the book called Delusion, and it's an excerpt from that. It was written by Brandon D. Murphy, and this article appeared in Waking Times. And it involves the yogi Lahira Mahasaya, who once told his doubtful student, a young Sri Yukteswar. And if you're not familiar with those names, Lahira Mahasaya and Sri Yukteswar, Sri Yukteswar was the guru of Paramahansa Yogananda, a very famous yoga master residing for the latter part of his life in California, and founder of the Self-Realization Fellowships. And so you probably heard of Paramahansa Yogananda and what I consider to be his writing of the basic yoga classic, which is Adabhati of a Yogi. And in my opinion, the basic extraterrestrial text would be from Arseniac's Bringers of the Dawn. So back to our story, the yogi Lahira Mahasaya once told his then doubtful student, a young Sri Yukteswar, that anything he believed intently would instantly become so. Yukteswar then asked if he believed as well and had regained his former healthy weight because he had become unhealthily thin. and if it would be so. And his guru reassured that even at that moment was. Before this exchange, Yukteswar's body health had fluctuated drastically in accordance with Mahasaya's verbal insinuations, almost taunting his confused protege over his consternation and lack of self-awareness. What Mahasaya was showing his unsuspecting student was that he had the intrinsic power to alter his reality through sheer belief, and that he'd been doing it unwittingly all along. He therefore could make himself strong and robust, or sick and feeble, on the basis of belief. Immediately from this exchange, with the revelation having taken seed in his mind, Yukteswar weighed himself and found he had gained an incredible 50 pounds of weight, 50 pounds that remained on him thereafter. How are such phenomena to be explained without acknowledging that we inhabit what Yogananda called an objectivized dream? This case, like the others, is merely a dramatic microcosm of what is happening all the time all around the planet. We are creating and experiencing reality constantly. And those who hold reductionist beliefs rigidly, whether they do it consciously or not, are literally creating via their prover a limited perceptual and experiential field for themselves. When you couple that with arrogance and sloppy logic that boils down to, if I can't see it or do it, then neither can you, you have a recipe for self-induced artificial blindness. This belief is often based on the assumption that everyone perceives the sensory world in the same way, since we all, generally speaking, have sense organs that are designed the same. This disregards the fact that anything we perceive is not perceived directly, but filtered through the neural network of the brain and our individual grids and beliefs before yielding some sort of impression that we interpret as being an objective reality. The images we perceive are the end result of a lightning-fast but highly sophisticated process of construction involving various stages, eventually leading, hopefully, to some kind of perception and approximation of reality, not reality itself. In this sense, it is believing that is seeing. As Rudyard noted in his Culture, Crisis, and Creativity, it is the culture-conditioned mind rather than eyes that do the seeing. Or as Bashar has stated, you have it backwards. Believing is seeing, not seeing is believing. And Santayana pointed out that we are all much better at believing than seeing. Almost all the time we see believe and only rarely see what we can't believe. We are less likely to decode in perceptual reality that which we do not believe in. And the mind actually, you know, it works in funny ways, let's say. And one of those funny ways was actually demonstrated in an experiment with a hypnotist. And they hypnotized a person, and they told that person that there was another person in the room, and they told him that that person had left the room under hypnosis. So in his mind, this person does not exist in the room. And then they stationed the person that was supposed to be leaving the room between the person who was hypnotized and the hypnotist. And then the hypnotist held his watch, faced it toward the person who was hypnotized, and asked him if he could tell him what time it was, and could he read the inscription on the watch. And the person who was told that was supposed to be invisible was stationed right between the two, blocking his view or his vision. But in actuality, he could read the time and the inscription on the watch. An interesting experiment that one can ponder a bit in their spare time. And for practical proof how powerful belief is, pay attention to the placebo effect. People cure themselves or get better for no logical reason other than that they believe it. And scientists like Greg Braden have been part of computer simulations that prove the universe is graphic and that, like computer program, there is a language of interpretation. And the language of interpretation of the universe is belief. So what you believe is. You must be a frequency match for what you experience in reality. And if you're not a frequency match, then you are, for practical purposes, invisible to it. If you do not resonate with certain information, then you will not notice it. The placebo effect does not work just in the medical areas either. It works in all areas of your life. And here's the physics of how this works. Each belief gets you vibrating at a unique set of frequencies, and these frequencies then attract, by sympathetic resonance, those holograms vibrating on the same frequencies. And this is out of the background universal matrix of impossible holograms. These holograms and symbols that synchronistically vibrate at the same frequencies as the frequencies of your belief get pulled out from this matrix, perceived by you as the actual external physical experiences that you then sense as real, that you see as objective reality. So each belief is a unique set of frequencies, which is a template that determines which holograms you attract into your experience. What we believe, and totally to be so, sets up the alignment for you to recognize that particular version of reality. And this trust or knowing is the mechanism by which creation takes place. Because without believing, we would create no reality and non-existent. Or, since time is only a local illusion that does not really exist, everything you ever hope to become or attain, you have already become and attained. If it is not visible to you, that's only because your beliefs do yet have you vibrating in a manner that is synchronous of those versions. Thus, to be effective at reality creation, that you are really not trying to create something new, you are trying to match frequencies with what already exists. So, I was referring to Curing Cancer in 3 Minutes by Greg Braden. And hospital in China, 3 practitioners, tumor disappear, and by knowing that it has already happened. And they acknowledge the current selected hologram, able to replace it with another version where the patient is healed. And from the perspective of the universal intelligence field, there is no future. All time is in the now. Heart-brain resonance, created by gratitude, put you in an optimum frequency to practice this type of healing reality creation. And I could also refer our listening audience to D. Marie Sheldon, S-H-E-L-D-O-N. If you go on Google search, she has a really nice YouTube presentation of raising your frequency. And she really tells the audience that through clairvoyant ability, when people are in a state of gratitude, there's actually a vortex that's formed around them, and thus would facilitate a reality creation. And you need to be aware of the fact that outer circumstances do not come with built-in meanings. Outer circumstances are neutral, and we positive or negative definitions on outer circumstances, and from this comes the positive or negative emotions, which determine the version of reality you'll experience. And this brings us to one of Bashar's concepts, the idea of positive spin. And to my thinking, there's 3 kind of major modes for doing recreation. One is beliefs that you've been downloaded with from your birth and by your original caregivers. So you've got subconscious beliefs and you've got a downloading of beliefs from early on. And at some point in time, you need to do your homework and go through that and find out what you picked up from there. The good ones, thanks and gratitude for it, and the ones that are no longer useful, you need to reprogram. And toward the program, I will be discussing reprogramming beliefs that in a little bit more detail. One of the things I found is next phase is what I call putting positive spin on outer circumstances. And this is a phase to make the most obvious to people to start to click into the idea that, yes, you have the power to create your own reality. And if you do start getting the practice of placing positive spin on circumstance, that, to me, is the easiest way to prove to yourself that this all works. And the power of positive spin means to place a positive emotional spin on an outer circumstance, thus creating a positive experience. If you place a negative emotional spin on an outer experience, you'll create a negative experience. And for years, I've challenged my audience of the ET Yoga show to do the experiment in this concept and prove it to yourself. Keep a log of any of that you view as negative and place a positive spin on it emotionally and note how it all plays out. Some circumstances will resolve more quickly than others, but once you get it, it'll blow your mind because it works. And I think that's the key thing here, that it does work, and you can prove it to yourself. And I call it the second phase of reality creation. And there's also a growing body of scientific evidence that suggests our universe works like a conscious computer. Rather than the number of codes of typical software, our consciousness computer uses language that we all have, yet are only beginning to understand. Life's reality is based in the language of human emotion and focused belief. Knowing that belief is our reality maker, the way we think of ourselves and our world is now more important than ever. And the Russian scientist Gerasimov recently discovered that thought alone we can connect with our DNA. Is this important? Because we were designed to have 12 strands of DNA activated, 12 chakras activated, which allows us to function as Christ-like beings utilizing consciously 100% of our brain. We have the ability to heal our own bodies. The power of belief actually rearranges the atoms to produce results. And we're not bound by the laws of physics. We're only limited to our own beliefs. And as Greg Braden states, what we choose to have up in our lives, we must first feel in our hearts as if it has already happened. You can give thanks, appreciation, gratitude that it has already happened in your life. In a modern-day science, because there is an effect, and the kind and quality of which is determined only by the cause that created it. So you and your beliefs serve as the cause, and the outcomes experienced as are the effects. And I would highly, highly, highly recommend that try this whole concept of throwing positive spin on outer circumstances, because it's clear that one of the key principles of quantum physics even is that our thoughts determine reality, and that our outer reality is a perfect reflection of our beliefs, missions, intentions, and emotions. And thus the fusion of our thoughts, emotions, beliefs, and intentions, which we call the human energy field, is perpetually informing the quantum reality within us and around us at each moment of our existence. And because reality has proven to flash in and out of existence, every time our reality oscillates between form and pure energy, our awareness, which is constant and doesn't flash in and out of existence, informs the field to reappear. And when it's transitioned back to form at the quantum level. So to internalize the understanding that reality is flashing in and out of form. And this is absolutely crucial in understanding the ability to heal, because half the time we are formless. Our bodies are a holographic projection of our consciousness, and they're the sum total of our beliefs about ourselves. So to heal, all that we need to do is purify our energy so that the energetic projection of our body is unobstructed. Our atoms and molecules can align perfectly to this structure because there is no energetic interference to disrupt the image of our body as projected by our consciousness. And I think this is really sensed, is really proven that, you know, with our bodies, that our bodies are a projection of our consciousness. And I think this is just really key idea. And I think it's also be fitting here to include the fact that about the spinning of the 12 chakras as a related topic to the power of positive spin, because it too is positive spin. Only it's really spinning. And I do have on my website information concerning doing the Pleiadian spinning technique. And I'm not going to go into detail that, but it's all about spinning the chakras. And our 12 strands of DNA actually activate our 12 chakra points or energy doorways through which we access our spiritual heritage. So the 12 strands of DNA serve as links through the 12 chakras to the energy web outside our bodies. And the 12 chakras act as energetic doorways into our body, connecting us to the vital forces of existence. And it's through opening and activating these portals of energy that we can truly begin to know ourselves. So our task is to awaken, activate, and unite all 12, creating the spinning of the 12, and the spinning of the 12 strands of DNA and 12 chakra points draw us to energies that will intermingle and move throughout our beings, activating and awakening the many different aspects of ourselves. Our 12 chakra collections of energy where events can emerge, they hold memory, and each corresponds to a strand of DNA. And according to information, the easiest way to connect to the DNA strands is to focus on the 12 chakras and visualize them spinning in unison. And even more effective is to do this while spinning to the right, standing with feet about a foot apart. You can place your hands at chest level with your palms together and place your attention on your thumbs and begin spinning to the right or clockwise. And the idea is to build up to 33 spins and then work up to 99 spins a day. And according to the Pleiadians, these chakras are information centers or vortexes that, once activated, begin to spin. And when they spin, they create a movement inside your body, activates the light-encoded filaments to work together, rebundle, and form the 12 evolving helixes in the body. Spinning tremendously accelerates the spinning of the chakra system inside your body, which tremendously accelerates the rate at which you interpret and receive data. So very, very, very powerful techniques. And the Pleiadians actually offered the spinning techniques because they were asked about providing a system that really works. And I'd also like to relate to new information at the Creating Camelot Club, and that's where Marilyn the Magician has her site. And there's information there from Merlin the Magician. And I want to share with you an amazing article, I think, because it has some very practical application with respect to reality creation. And this is from Merlin the Magician. It's called Your Magic Wand. And he says that if you don't think you own a wand, I invite you to play along. Your wand is very real and extremely powerful. Pay attention to where you point it, because just like magic, what you find yourself pointing at in time will appear right before you, even if you'd rather not see that something. This is where hardships come into play, when you forget to play. How much time do you spend playing in your imagination, as opposed to how much time you spend looking at the reality that is already made manifest? And I'm going to repeat that because I think that's the key of this whole article. How much time do you spend playing in your imagination as opposed to how much time you spend looking at the reality that is already made manifest? How can much change if you see to it by your very creative say-so that things have not changed? It defies the physics of law of attraction. Most people spend a great deal more time looking at and listening to how others created their dreams come true via music, books, business, success, sports, television, movies, rather than in dreaming their own desires into being. You literally pay others for dreaming, and that is all fine and good. But have you forgotten about your dreams if they haven't come true? I'm here to tell you that if you spent just half as much time paying attention to your creations as you do involved with others' creations, many more of you would be living your dreams in manifest form. Imagine what you could do with spending as much time. Things beyond your wildest dreams and imaginations would come to you because you went beyond where most are willing to go. Do you have a dream or desire that you know is you, but it hasn't come true? Then let me show you the way of the wizard, to bring forth that which is more of who you are, who you know yourself to be, if the truth be known. It can be shown if you show the universe who you are, who you had every intention of being and are remembering more fully now. I think that's a really, really valuable point being made there. And it also relates to spending time with our imagination. And imagine spending at least half of the time in your imagination as opposed to being aware of what already is manifesting to you. Very, very, to my way of thinking, a very powerful, powerful belief and concept. And in my estimation, that can also relate dramatically to the power of positive spin, because if you're playing with your imagination, you can visualize placing positive spin on a circumstance, and you can even, you know, visualize it in a positive way. In fact, if you're playing with your imagination, you can even go back into your memory, and the universe really doesn't or can't tell the difference between if you remember a past event the way it happened or if you choose to remember it the way you would like it to have happened. Interesting concept. Another one of those concepts, kind of like you don't have a belief you don't prefer. So if you have a negative belief, it tells you that you can do some homework around that negative belief. And what you need to find out is, why do you have that belief? Because human nature always leads us, the motivational mechanism leads us to pleasure and away from pain, or what we perceive as toward pleasure and away from pain. So if you perceive a situation to be negative, it's clearly there's a reason, and bears scrutiny. So it's another one of those ideas that you can follow up on. Now, to my way of thinking, when you're throwing positive spin on outer circumstances, the circumstances are typically already there. Now, then you're making a choice, and especially in the health area, if you've got any kind of negative scenario going on there, the first thing you need to do is throw positive spin on it. I mean, to me, this is like, that's square number one. And then you can go about, you know, solving your issues. But positive spin is just, to my way of thinking, it's just paramount when it comes to anything that's negative, especially in the health area. And power of positive spin, as I mentioned previously, to me is the easiest way for you to get connected with this whole idea of reality creation. Now, creating new circumstances, to me, and that's an area where I admit I struggle with this one. I find it's really tricky. And I think the some of the best information still relates to the concept of seeing situation as having already happened. And if you watch the Greg Braden video, Curing Cancer in 3 Minutes, it demonstrates this whole concept that the practitioners see the patient as already having been healed. And that's the key to changing the current manifestation. And I should also point out that Jeff Andrews, I think, has a really great concept when he states that everything is a result of consciousness, and that which is not yet here in physical form, which has not yet been discovered and conceived in mind, exists within the infinite field of potentiality, or the superconscious mind. And you only need think it into being, hold it in mind as an already existing reality in the physical world, and the ways and means to bring it into your reality will manifest just as you instruct. Based on the spiritual teachings that he has discovered, whatsoever you desire, the limitations are based on what you believe is possible for yourself. And according to modern-day science, for every cause, there's an effect, and the kind and quality of which is determined only by the cause which created it. So you and your beliefs serve as the cause, and the outcomes expressed as a result are the effects. And when observing nature, it is apparent that whatever seed you plant will receive a harvest based on and limited to the type of seed planted. You can choose what each and every aspect of your life will consist of once you learn to become consciously aware that all things are possible, that you, as an integral part of the whole, have the ability to make them a reality, to develop a conscious awareness of the seeds that you are planting through your thought process consciously, purposely, and intentionally holding the ideal, the desired outcome, as an already existing fact. Align and allow your emotions to ignite as if you already possessed it in an already existing physicality, and the infinite field of potentiality, or the superconscious mind, will deliver to you without judgment just as you desire to experience. You have been provided an unalienable right of free will to think as you choose to think, and you have the ability to consciously control those emotions which act as the frequency intensifier of those thoughts and conceptualizations that you choose to think. You hold the same identical ability to create that you choose, regardless of what you might currently observe, believe, and perceive reality to be. You can choose to begin consciously and purposely creating whatsoever desired results that you choose to experience in your life, or choose to remain an unconscious creator, fully believing that whatever you experience in life happens as the result of some random and uncontrollable act of capricious external circumstances. The conscious mind has provided you with the unalienable right of free will to choose what your reality will be. And you've been provided with this free will and choice. So I guess, you know, it's an interesting challenge to all of us, because what you choose, you're right. And whatever you believe is absolutely correct. There's no right or wrong reality. There is, however, higher truth, which will enable you to experience a higher quality of life that the majority only dream about. So I think he makes some really good points there. And I think Merlin the Magician also made some interesting points when he brought up the whole concept about there's kind of a demarcation line between ascension and fourth and fifth dimension, and that demarcation line is that the people who are going to be stuck in third dimension are going to be the ones who believe that their thoughts, beliefs, intentions, emotions have no effect really on their outer circumstances. The demarcation line begins when you start to become aware of the fact that these things do create your reality. And your outer reality is a mere reflection. And so if you want to find out what you believe, look at what's happening around you and start identifying those concepts. And your reality is not there to punish you. It's there to show you what you believe so that you can make the adjustments to it. And I like to borrow a little bit of Bashar's thinking here, and to use some technique, actually, how to change beliefs. Because let's say you're noticing something in your reality that you'd like to change. Well, your emotions are the key. Because when you feel an idea you don't prefer, like fear, self-doubt, sorrow, sadness, etc., the first thing is not to ignore or suppress it, but to feel it fully, own it, because you cannot change what you do not own. So just recognize, acknowledge, and own it, and then ask yourself this question. What would I have to believe is true of my relationship to this situation in order to feel this way or to react like this? Your higher mind will help you find the beliefs that are generating that emotional experience. Next, as you identify the belief, it is gone. Because any belief, any definition that you consciously identify out of alignment with your true self, when you identify it, it will automatically appear illogical and nonsensical. It won't make much sense. That's how you know it's out of alignment with your truth. So as soon as you identify the belief that is out of alignment, it will automatically appear illogical to hold on to it, and in that second, you will no longer have it. Believing in your ability to change belief is the key that unlocks and allows you to create the reality you prefer. Which, again, we do by getting in touch with the belief is creating our current reality and replacing it with belief we prefer, thus generating the reality we want. And I might also add, according to Bashar, one of the key issues with thing reality creation is a sense of deservability. And I think this is really the foundation of doing reality creation. Don't have a good sense of deservability, then all techniques in the world are only going to show minimal results. And I think so it's a really good fundamental starting point is to know that there's only two really objective facts in the universe. One is that the entire creation was done with unconditional love, and second, that we have awareness. And basically, anything after that is pretty much subject. I mean, our basic personality structure, I think, is at the alpha brain level. So it's not even as deep as delta and theta. So, I mean, personalities are basically an artificial construct so that we can experience these different levels of density and additions. And our higher self exists just outside time-space continuum, and we're a fragment, obviously, of our higher selves, and at the more at the deeper level, we are our higher selves. So our higher self splits off a fragment that which we, at this point, we would call like an incarnation, and interestingly enough, with our DNA, we're capable of simultaneous incarnations. And makes for a pretty interesting scenario. We've got some of the most fascinating DNA in the world, which is why there's so many people in different extraterrestrial civilizations that are connected with us. And apparently, we have some connections with about 22 different races out there with our DNA. So it's some of the most amazing in the world. And, of course, if we were all functioning, it's all 12 chakras fully opened and 12 strands of DNA activating, yeah, we'd be like super beings, which is our potential. And I think it's great that in this day and age that we're starting to be aware of what that potential is. And as I've mentioned many times on ET Yoga, I think things like reality creation really, I don't know, as far as I can trace back, all this kind of came about with the Seth material. Certainly, you know, the Law of One, Miracles, the Ra material, Bashar. I mean, Bashar has been teaching all that information that came out in The Secret that became sort of a mass awareness of some of these concepts a few years back. But he's been teaching it for like 30 years on the planet. And so those people that go way back with Bashar, that's old news to them. But I think a lot of these concepts is why I came up with the concept of ET yoga, is because from my yogic background, which basically from the traditional teachers such as Sri Ramana Maharshi and Paramahansa Yogananda and Sri Swami Satchidananda, what I saw from a lot of channeled extraterrestrial was a lot of concepts and ideas that relate to thought creates. And thought creates was never really part of my yoga training. So to me, the whole idea of extraterrestrial information and yogic teachings, they just fit like a glove because they don't negate each other. They just enhance each other, in my opinion. And thus, I wanted to do ET Yoga and share how those connections that come about. Because a lot of this stuff about reality creation is really very practical. And it's something we can do on a daily basis. And it's a lot, and it can be a lot of fun. And you can kind of relate it to magic. Because prior to these concepts coming to the mass awareness, they didn't exist. I mean, I don't know, when I was growing up, I didn't hear things like our thoughts, beliefs, and tens emotions were creating my outer reality. I didn't know about placing positive spin on outer circumstances. I wasn't taught in my educational experience about that outer experiences don't come with built-in meanings. Maybe if you sat around and thought about it, maybe you could come to that conclusion, which I find most people don't have trouble understanding that concept. Because they can know that if they sit down at a dinner table, there might be food that some people like and don't, so it's the same experience, but it's not experienced in the same manner or perceived the same way. So most people grasp that concept fairly well. But I'm saying it in terms of really relating it to your experiences and relating it to the fact that if everything's neutral, then how do we create disease? Because disease is basically dysfunction. Well, it comes from placing negative spin or negative belief on neutral circumstances. So in a sense, it's all, you know, self-created, which leads us into the whole concept of judgment, because if we could eliminate judgment in our lives, especially negative judgment, then we benefit by not creating any kind of disease. And as well, we're starting to learn that everything's a frequency, and certainly disease is lower frequencies, so now we're learning to attract more positive things. We want to eat things that have positive frequency to them, and we want to create a higher frequency in our awareness consciousness. And by the way, one of the best ways I know to increase your frequency is do the pillar of light meditate. So when you, because anytime you're drawing light into the body, bringing it into your 12 chakras, you're increasing your frequency. And so thus, the Pleiadians as well, I find the Syrians, Andromeda, Turians, they're providing us with lots of really key information that we can utilize on a daily basis. And yet at the same time, I don't think we want to really lose sight of the key foundation of the yogic principles, which is all about self-realization. So to me, the most important concept still remains that to become self-realized, which means being one with your higher self. And I think that sometimes this gets lost in our daily world. And I could suggest some YouTubes out there by the name Muji. And if you don't know about Muji, it's M-O-O-J-I. And in my opinion, I mean, who could say for sure about anybody, but I think the guy is self-realized. And certainly his information, my way of thinking, is spot on. And he really gets to the whole idea of not being so caught up in your identity, but that sort of that awareness that's just beyond before you were given a name. Because when we spend all our time, you know, thinking that we are our identity, then, you know, it's just kind of it's a dead end. And the whole concept of self-realization comes from being aware of the fact that there are higher levels of consciousness and we have the ability to attain them. And to my thinking, that's the true baptism. That's when the seed's planted. That's when the spiritual seed grows. And from there, it grows at the rate it grows. And this whole concept of who am I, which was the vichara taught by Sri Ramana Maharshi, is something that I'm going to share with you in the next so. But I do want to take this opportunity to wish everyone my best towards your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance, and give my appreciation and gratitude to the ET Yoga audience for hanging in there through our technical difficulties tonight, and certainly much appreciate that your presence is there. And now to move on to this concept about awareness of the Who Am I technique, because the Who Am I technique can create a door which you can experience your higher self and beyond. So I'm going to now share with you that technique called the Vichara. It came originally from Sri Ramana Maharshi. I first learned about it through Baba Ram Das. And the way I do it is I would prefer to do my asanas and then my pranayams. But if you don't do yoga asanas, you don't do yoga pranayams, it's not a prerequisite to this technique. But it can help make things go a little easier because then you're eliminating all the tension from the body and then the tension from the mind. And there's clearly a connection between thought and breath. So pranayams really help to melt the mind. And then I would try to put my full, get in the highest place you know how to get to, with a brief japa yoga mantra meditation like the Hari Om or whatever other technique that you find gets you to the highest place you can and highest frequency you know how to get to. From that position, try and place your full consciousness in your ajna center or your sixth chakra or your third eye. So you're putting all your consciousness in your third eye and you're creating a spot there. So you are the spot that's in your ajna center. And from that spot, I would then ask the question, who am I, about 35 times, let's say. And as you're asking the question, you're clearly attracting the answer from the universe. And then after I've done that, I would then do the following. I would state that I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am my thoughts. I am not this spot what spot?
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all.